Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hi again. Welcome to the Cross Border Catch-Up, the podcast for global employers who want to stay in the know about cutting-edge employment issues worldwide. I'm Shireen Abjadi, and I'm here with my colleague Lena Fernandez, and this is part two of our cross-border discussion on what to do when you're setting up a new country and the things that employers need to think about as they engage new business. So we've talked about existing policies, we've talked about the requirement to create regulations, and then there are the quirky ones, right? The unique policies that only exist in certain markets where you'd never think that they would apply. You know, you've got jurisdictions like France and Spain that require employers to allow their employees the right to disconnect. Right? What does that mean? It means that employers have to allow their employees to step away from work after work hours and not be tethered to their work, not be responding to emails or taking phone calls late at night, which is a very foreign concept to U.S. employers. And then you've got the requirement to have a 4% vacation pay premium in Canada, which is also a thing that's very different to U.S. employers. And so in addition to looking at what your existing cache of policies is, and then what are the work regulations that you have to implement, you've still got to ask the question, is there a weird quirk or a unique policy in that specific jurisdiction that I also need to be following that I hadn't thought of?
Yeah, and like the ones that you mentioned are quite unique. So, but for example, in Peru, the sexual harassment policy must be written in such a specific way that almost, like, I can guarantee that almost no other sexual harassment policy for other country would comply with Peruvians' requirements. So if you're setting up a shop in Peru and you already have a sexual harassment policy in place, you will still have to think about the specific requirements for Peru. Why? Because Peru requires you to follow such a strict procedure, and you have to communicate to the employees that specific procedure that at the end of the day, you will have to modify your policy to include that specific procedure.
Yeah, those are just employer policies, right? Those are just the policies that employers have to come out with as a requirement under the local law. In addition to that, you've then got to check whether the jurisdiction has a collective bargaining agreement that applies. And we have this issue come up all the time, don't we? Where we'll ask a client, you know, okay, fine, you've set up in Spain or you've set up in Germany or in Italy, what's the collective bargaining agreement that applies? And the response we always get back is, oh, we're not unionized, so we don't have one. And unfortunately, that's not the case in most jurisdictions. In a number of jurisdictions, you know, in a number of jurisdictions in Europe, you've got collective bargaining agreements that are going to apply to your employees, whether you like it or not, purely because they work in a particular sector. In Spain, for example, not only do they work in a particular sector, but then there are different agreements based on what city you work in. So if you've got retail employees in Madrid, they're going to fall under the sector collective bargaining agreement for retail employees in Madrid. And the ones that work in Barcelona are going to fall under the sector agreement for retail employees in Barcelona. So you're going to have one shop in Madrid, one shop in Barcelona, and you're going to have a collective bargaining agreement that tells you different terms and conditions of employment for each of those two groups. Because collective bargaining agreements will usually cover things like overtime rules, meal and rest breaks, whether the employee is entitled to things like wedding leave or moving leave. So that's another thing that employers opening up in a new jurisdiction have to think about.
Yeah, and that's very similar to how it works in Brazil, for example. So all employees are covered under a collective bargaining agreement. And it is determined by the geographic location where the employees are and also by the industry of the company. So you need to make sure which collective bargaining agreement applies to your specific employees. And if you are in an industry that has mixed businesses, you want to make sure that you're applying the collective bargaining agreement that's directly related with the core business. And that sometimes gets tricky because let's say you're in the industry of digital marketing. And for that, you need engineers and you need people who specializes in marketing. Then you need to decide whether you apply the engineering collective bargaining agreement or the marketing collective bargaining agreement. So it's a tricky decision, but at the end of the day, you will have to apply one collective bargaining agreement per region and per the industry based on your core business.
And do employers in those cases, do they get to pick the one that's most beneficial to them?
They have to pick the one that's reasonably tied to their core business. So it's not about whether it's beneficial to the employers or not. They have to demonstrate that in good faith, this is the collective bargaining agreement that's related to their core business. And employers are also represented by unions. So how it works in practice, the union representative of the employers will meet with the union representative of the employees and they will come out with the collective bargaining agreement. And as you mentioned, it will cover topics such as overtime, vacation pay, premium for vacation, and like additional benefits to those that are statutorily required.
And then you've got jurisdictions like Australia that have modern awards for different types of employees. You'll have, a modern award for clerical staff and admin staff, and then another modern award for professional staff and IT staff. And you have to apply the modern award that relates to that specific group. And so what that means is you end up sometimes with one company having to apply three or four modern awards to different classes of employees. And so you'll have people sitting in the same building, sometimes even next to each other, where one is subject to one modern award and the other is subject to a different modern award. And managing that and the different terms and conditions that apply in some cases to those employees can be really tricky.
Oh, that's incredible. I can't imagine the operational burden for companies trying to determine which rule you're going to apply because you have contractual entitlements, then you have statutory requirements, and now you may have a couple of different collective bargaining agreements that apply to your workforce.
And then on top of that, right, those are just the state-led collective agreements and awards. But then on top of that, you've got some jurisdictions which actually mandate that you set up works councils or labor management councils that are made up of just employees. And those little groups have rights as well. So in a jurisdiction like France, there is actually a mandate that once you go over 50 employees, you have to have a works council election. It's required. You don't get a choice in it. And then once you have a works council set up, then they have rights and they've got the right to be informed and consulted on a whole host of topics, which kind of takes the decision making slightly out of the employer's hand. In those cases, Korean's another great example. Korea requires the setup of a labor management council when you reach 30 employees, and they've got certain rights too. So not only do you have to worry about these collective agreements and these modern awards, but then in some cases, once you reach a certain threshold of employees, or if the employees ask for it in certain jurisdictions, then you've got these employee representative bodies in-house that have rights onto themselves.
Yeah, it's a lot, it's a huge administrative burden, and companies should be aware about these thresholds because it's not a standard number. It's not that it's typically 30 employees. Like it changes. It's 30 employees, 50 employees, 100 employees.
So just another thing that employers need to think about. And so you've got employees, now you've got all of the work rules and the policies that govern them, and you think, okay, finally, right? We can get moving, and we can do this, and we're all set, and we don't have to think about anything else anymore, right? Wrong. On top of all of that, then you've got to think about what are your mandatory reporting obligations? Because, in the US, we've got the EEO-1 report that most employers know about, but what else is there out there? You've got mandatory posting obligations like they do in California. You've got the UK Modern Slavery Act, which requires companies to publish an annual statement. But on top of that, the latest trend these days is reporting on gender pay and equality. In Australia, you've got the Workplace Gender Equality Agency reporting requirements. And then in the EU, you've got gender reporting legislation that's just come out as part of the directive, where, as of 2027, if you've got more than 250 employees, you're going to have to report annually on the average pay level between male and female employees. And then on top of that, if there's a 5% discrepancy or an unjustified difference, then you're going to need to conduct a pay assessment. And that's going to happen if you've got the right number of employees. That's going to have to happen on an annual basis. And so, the work doesn't stop.
Yeah, and like that's a trend that's picking up in Latin America. So, for example, Brazil, employers with 100 or more employees, they have to submit salary transparency reports every 6 months, and you have to include the remuneration for male and for females, and the reports must be anonymized to protect employees' data. But yeah, that's another administrative burden that's added there. And like in this case, it's every 6 months. You gotta be updating your reports, you gotta be looking at your workforce, and you gotta be looking at what. And it's not only about the salary that you're paying them, you have to include also the benefits, whether they are in cash or whether they are in kind. All of these benefits must be added to determine the employee's actual salary for reporting purposes.
Yeah, and it's not just annually, right? In some jurisdictions, it's more than annually.
Yes. Yeah, in Brazil is every 6 months.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Every 6 months, you've literally got to stop what you're doing, collect all that data, and get a report ready.
Yes. And talking about reports that are due it several times in a year, I have a perfect example in Peru. So the sexual harassment regulations in Peru require employers to register every time they receive a claim for sexual harassment before a website that's from the government. So when you get a sexual harassment claim from an employee, the employer must register the claim before this portal. And it's not only that the registration of the claim, the employer must also have to report that they initiated the investigation. They need to include what measures were taken during the investigation to protect the employee that's making the complaint. And you also have to include at the end of the investigation what's the disciplinary decision making that you have taken. So if you received, and hopefully you don't, but if you received 10 sexual harassment claims in a year, you have to do 10 different procedures, internal investigations, and you need to submit them to the government's website as a
Wow.
reporting requirement. In fact, the law requires you to have an individual, when you have less than 20 employees, an individual must be the sexual harassment delegatee so that the person can coordinate the process. When you have more than 20 employees, you have to actually have a committee composed of employer representatives and employee representative to conduct these investigations. So yeah, there's definitely a trend towards monitoring sexual harassment and trying to make it public and actually easy for employees to report.
And speaking of, you know, things that you've got to monitor and data you've got to monitor, that's another thing to be cognizant of is data privacy, right? I mean, so many jurisdictions these days are coming out. GDPR obviously led the way, but there are many, many jurisdictions out there that have created GDPR-like data privacy laws. And so when you go into a new market, that's another thing, you know, you've got to look at. Are your systems and your policies compliant with the local data privacy laws? And are your HRIS systems meeting all the requirements to start accepting data from this new jurisdiction? And do you have the right privacy notices in place? Then you've got to think about whether the jurisdiction has subject access rights for their employees. You know, you've got in Europe and under GDPR, every employee has the right to make a subject access request. And the same in some of the Asia Pacific countries like New Zealand. And that gives the employee the right to essentially request every email with their name on it. And so you've got to be thinking about that well ahead of time as well.
Yeah, this data privacy point is a great point, Shireen, because if you're setting up business in another country, you may want to transfer certain data from employees from that country to your home country, let's say for HR decision purposes. And the cross-border transfer of data is very well regulated, and you got to make sure that when you're transferring data, you not only have the authorization from the employee, but that the country that's receiving the data also have the minimum requirements to protect that individual's data.
Yeah. So yeah, just another thing that you've got to be thinking of, right? And so, okay, so fine, right? Our organizations, our employers, our clients out there, they've finally done everything that we've just talked about, right? And everything is going fine. They've got employees, they've got policies, they've got their data set up where they need to, they've got their annual reporting being done as it needs to be done. And then inevitably, one of their employees does something that is grounds for either misconduct or they're not performing, or it's just not the right fit, and now they want to terminate their first employee, right? And this is the type of thing that employers really need to be thinking about well ahead of time as they go into a market, because there shouldn't be any surprises when it comes to how to terminate an employee in a new market. And in some jurisdictions, it's not easy. You know, you've got a jurisdiction like the Netherlands where in order to terminate an employee, you have to go to court and get approval. You don't have the right as an employer to terminate your own employee. And then you've got jurisdictions like Germany and Japan, where if you don't get it right and you don't have sufficient grounds, there's no damages. The remedy is reinstatement with back pay. And so if you get it wrong, or if you don't know what you're doing, the court's going to turn around and say, too bad, so sad, give them their job back, pay them back pay. And meanwhile, the process is taken forever. So it might be a year's worth of back pay that you're looking at. And then if you ever want to let them go after that, it's, forget an uphill battle. It's climbing Mount Everest. So it's really important that employers look at the termination rules when they're setting up shop.
You go to other countries and the first checking concept is, well, if you want to terminate without cause, which is actually most of the terminations because of the uphill battles that you're mentioning, then you have to pay statutory severance. So that's like the first shock that you get. And then on top of that, you get these very specific rules about like court approval, reinstatement, and another foreign concept that I've seen applicable for terminations is separation agreements. So in the States, separation agreements are very standard, common practice. Employees release their employer for any annual claims. They receive consideration as an exchange, and everyone is happy at the end of the day. However, in certain countries in Latin America, for example, in Colombia, like these separation agreements are only valid with respect to waivable claims that are not true and certain. So you could say in a separation agreement that the employee is waiving all employment-related claims and give the employee some consideration in exchange for that representation. But at the end of the day, if the employee wants to, they could go to court and sue to get compensation for true and certain rights. So, and these are rights that you cannot waive. And generally, these are statutory rights. So if you owe the employee salaries, overtime, vacation, social security contributions, the employee is not relinquishing those via the release agreement. So the employee can still go to court and claim damages for those unpaid entitlements.
Yeah. It's the same in some of the countries in the Middle East. You know, if you go to a country like Saudi Arabia and you sign a mutual agreement with an employee, you think you're all in the clear, and then the employee can go file a claim, like you said, for statutory entitlements that haven't been paid, and a court will entertain that claim. And the mutual separation agreement won't mean anything if the court finds that you haven't paid the employee their vacation entitlements or the overtime that's required to them or any of those various mandatory statutory components. And then on top of that, you've got the jurisdictions where even if you sign a mutual separation agreement, you've then got to get a court to validate it. There are a number of European jurisdictions where you can agree with the employee to a mutual separation agreement, but the separation agreement won't actually be valid unless you've then gone to the court and had them give it that green light in an official capacity. And so an employee's signature on the document itself isn't good enough in those markets.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a common misconception for foreign employers. You need to make sure that if you're going to offer discretionary payments, that you're offering them for a document that's legally binding and that you're not in practice just giving away money for free.
Yeah, exactly. And there are even some jurisdictions, the UK, for example, that won't validate an agreement unless you've had an attorney review it. And there's a solicitor certificate that will go at the back of an agreement that needs to be filled out by a qualified solicitor before the agreement can be considered valid. So it forces employees to actually go out and get legal advice before the agreement can be deemed valid.
Yeah, in Argentina, it's exactly the same. Employer and employee, they have to be represented by an attorney. And there is very brief online proceeding before a labor authority that would validate the agreement. And if the labor authority says, like, no, this agreement doesn't make any sense, it is unfair, I'm not going to validate it. And that's the end. The agreement doesn't get validated. You don't get a legally binding document. And then the employee could start a claim at that point.
Yeah. So there you go, right? A million and one things that you've got to think of as you look to exit employees. And another important thing that employers need to be thinking about when they enter a market. So I hope this has been helpful. You know, as we tell all our clients, think carefully about all of the different things that you need to consider when you're going into a new market. Well, I think that brings us to the end. Thank you for joining us for today's cross-border catch-up. Follow us to stay in the know about cutting-edge employment issues worldwide. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.